Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Hello, you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM on this beautiful Tuesday evening. Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. We're going to talk to Paul Nicholls in a few minutes' time after the very sad death of his former stable star, Cotto star, earlier this morning. Desi Dolan and Bernard Flynn on what next for Westmeath and Meath and their respective championship journeys. Gary Cahill is at Wimbledon and keeping an eye on proceedings for us. A good day for Andy Murray. And Gary Murphy and Johnny Ward are with me in studio. You're both very welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well.
Excellent, Hugh.
Fine weather for golf these days, Gar.
Yeah, it's glorious. Absolutely wonderful. Shorts on for the last few days.
Yes, we're both gearing up for the Pro-Am in Slieve Russell next week. We're broadcasting live from Slieve Russell itself on Monday night. We're looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to teaching you a thing or two about how to hit that golf ball, baby. Boom.
I will never play golf ever again if you beat me in Slieve Russell. Ever.
How many? Okay, so you're playing off what?
Plus your handicap.
Plus 8, are you?
No, scratch.
Scratch, and I'm 13 good ones.
13, so yeah. 26 shots over two rounds.
Yeah.
You will never see my face again if you beat me.
Even okay. Handicap.
No.
Johnny, you're a witness to this now. Like, yeah. I mean, you've taken some foolish bets in your time. The last one was Johnny Mullen and Undo Zoe, but this man is cutting his game on career on the line here.
Well, I think he's putting his golfing career on the line. Not so much his game.
It can't happen. I played within the Heritage and it's just...
Well,
it's not pretty.
It was an off day that particular day. Yeah, a few snap hooks, all right. A few of them ended up in Port Leash. Speaking of, we have Pat Ryan coming up in just a couple of minutes' time on the wonderful achievement of Michael O'Reilly to win gold at the European Games. But look, I mentioned Cotto star in the introduction, Johnny, and it's been a very, very sad day for connections of the horse, for anyone who knew him, Ruby Walsh included, and for just racing fans in general.
Yeah, it is, and it's quite unusual because the actual accident happened to him last Wednesday, and he was put down, I believe, at 3 o'clock yesterday. So, considering the status of Cotto star, who would be the best steeplechaser, I suppose, of my lifetime, anyway, for it to be almost a day later, for it to be actually revealed to the press, is a bit odd. But it is really sad, you know. You need context. He was a 15-year-old horse who died. Most race horses don't get to 15, but he was a legend, an absolute legend. And, you know, I think anyone who dealt with him will be very, very moved by this. I think it's not a million miles away from a death of a close relative anyway, or something like that. Mm. And
Would you have been a fan in terms of backing him over the years? Or, I mean, he was generally quite short, you know, over the last couple of years, and then he kind of had that old age reinvigoration, if you like. But
he did, yeah. I tended to back him on the rare occasions that he didn't win. I had it was one of those, because he used to be unbackable much of the time. And then I remember I did back Denman when Denman beat him the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
But I lumped on Cotto, I think, the following year or 2 years later when he fell. But Cotto star actually fell in a race once. Ruby got back up in him,
he
and
did.
He was beaten a short head, and that was one of his greatest achievements, I think. He fell in a race and was beaten a short head.
He did,
and they got rid of you couldn't remount in Britain shortly after that. So amazing racehorse, and as Ruby said, for him to have the versatility to be winning at the top level over 2 miles and 3.25 miles, you just don't get that, and he was amazing.
I remember walking into a bookies in Ranelagh, and Eamon Dunphy was in there, and we were both there to watch the same race, and it was actually the race that Best Mate died in Exeter.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Cotto star was running in that same
race. Was that the same day, was it?
I think it was the same day.
Yeah.
And the two of us were there to watch the same race, and of course I had a few quid on Best Mate.
Yeah, Paul Carberry rode him that day, I remember.
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, we had a good old chat, and that's where Eamon and myself are kind of our bond and friendship grew that day. We realised we had similar interests.
It was born out of tragedy, kind of.
It was. That's one way of looking at it. But look, can I just take it? We're going to speak to Paul in a few minutes' time, but a little bit suspicious, perhaps, how everything has unfolded over the last few days, given that the announcement was only made this morning. Do you think that there's more to it, or what?
I wouldn't say there's necessarily more to it, but Nicholas' comments were interesting today, and to the effect that he only really heard about this not much earlier than we did, and which was quite touching, you know. And Nicholas was with him for whatever, what's 9 or 10 years. I think he had him as a 4 or 5 year old.
Yeah.
But he just said it was a simple thing. I would have liked to have said goodbye. And I thought that was, you know, I'm not one who gets remotely touched really, when a racehorse dies, I just think it's part of the game. But I really thought that resonated, you know. And regardless of who owns the horse or who looks after him, Paul Nicholls was closer to him than anyone for a long time. And it was just quite interesting that he said that. And he was like, I didn't know anything was wrong. And I would have liked to have had that chance to say goodbye to him. Whatever, you know, our thoughts are about the career he had subsequent to racing, which was a little unorthodox, it does seem a bit strange. And, you know, it was perhaps a manifestation of the breakdown in relations between his owner, Clive Smith, and Paul Nicholls.
Clive Smith, I have to say, for me, is just has tainted that horse, what he did. I did watch him in one dressage event and I nearly just threw the TV out the window. Just felt completely wrong. This legendary steeplechaser, so decorated, so brilliant to watch around racecourses in dressage.
Yeah, it was. I'd highly doubt most owners would do that, and especially given what he'd given. I think at that stage of his life, you'd nearly be trying to give him just a happy retirement. That's what I would have done. It was well documented that Paul Nicholls was very much against what happened.
They fell out because of it.
They did. You know, Nicholls is a difficult enough guy in some respects. I quite like him, but he's his own man. I think it was probably just a clash of two strong personalities, but the ultimate outcome we have here is quite sad, really, you know, and it's a bit of a sour taste in the mouth, I think, in terms of Nicholls.
It does.
You know, and, you know, you can't imagine him kind of, I think he was quite, I think he spoke quite well today in terms of probably biting his tongue a bit, because it's well established that he doesn't get on with Clive Smith anymore, and he probably thinks the horse should still be alive, in effect.
Okay, well, let's talk to the man himself, because as I mentioned, very sad news that Cotto Star, if you've just heard, had to be put down after a fall. The former two-time Gold Cup winner and record breaker indeed, Paul Nicholls. Before we go to him, we can listen now to Cotto Star's record breaking fifth win in the King George at Kempton. Have a listen.
Second last, Ruby Walsh gets a wonderful jump out of him. He's still out in front. Long runs are rallying. One more fence between him and glory. Can he do it? Can the dream be achieved here? Comes to it. Long Run and Sam Whaley Cohen are rallying, but I think he's done it. Long Run's trying his heart out, but the scarves, the papers are going all over the place. He's done it. Wonderful, magical. Cotto Star has won the King George for the fifth time. I don't believe it. Quite extraordinary. At 11 years of age, he was written off at the start of the season, and now he's trounced a high-class field in brilliant fashion. Oh my God, what a race.
What a race is right, what a horse as well. I'm delighted to be joined by Paul Nicholls on the line. Paul, listen, I can't imagine this is an easy day for you or the team at Ditchett. How do you feel today?
Obviously everyone's extremely upset, as anybody who follows racing will be. Just listening to that clip of him winning that fifth King George, like, was just an absolutely awesome day. You know, you said he was written off at the end of the season before last, came out and won at Haydock and Kempton. That was a magic day, and just said everything about the horse.
How did you come across him, Paul? Can you just tell us briefly?
Well, Clive was looking for a decent horse. I asked Anthony Bromley to see if we could find one. We nearly actually bought a horse called Guard Champetra at the sales. He made a bit too much money, and then I think about a month later Anthony came up with Cotto Star. We were looking for a chaser, and you know, he obviously fitted the bill.
And what was so special about him, can you remember, when you initially got him? Did you think he would go on to be the horse that he was?
No, I mean, he'd won a nice novice hurdling at Toy. He was a big, scopey chasing horse, not a brilliant pedigree, but was a nice horse. But the minute we started doing anything with him, you just knew he was all class.
Because some horses, you know, of star quality, shall we say, maybe have reputations of being a little bit tricky to train or a little bit pernickety in their mannerisms. Was Cotto Star like that?
He wasn't the easiest. In about the box and everything, he was a gent. He was like your best mate. But to train, he was very, very sharp. He did sort of stupid things. I always said he had nine lives, and sadly he's run out of one of them. But he always used to put himself into some tricky situations. And there were several days, I think, he was very, very coming about loose. And Ruby was always frightened to death when he used to come and ride him out on the ditch every month in school. He was just riding him to the school and ground a random village, because he was very sharp. And that was just the way he was. But he's just a wonderful horse.
Unpredictable then?
Well, not necessarily unpredictable. We got to know him, and we knew everything about him. So you minimise the things and you don't take any chances with him. And Clifford, who rode him every day, knew that. But he was just a high-class horse, you know, huge engine, will to win, had everything.
I was lucky enough to be at Cheltenham for his first Gold Cup win, and I was standing at the last fence actually with a couple of friends of mine, and we had shall we say, a bit of investment in him in actually winning the race. Yeah. And I remember he kind of hit that little last fence a little bit, but managed to get, he had done all the hard work at that stage and managed to get up that hill. And I'll never forget that. It was just an incredible day.
Yeah, they literally just shown it now in our UK. And, yeah, like you say, he missed the last, but it never stopped him. He had a knack of being able to sort of walk through the last and never stop him. And then he galloped all the way to the line. And I mean, that day looked a real true stayer, because there were times you probably thought 3 1/4 was a bit far for him. But he was on that day, he was, you know, one of his best performances.
Have you spoken to Ruby today?
Yeah, we've had a chat. Yeah, obviously I rang him this morning to tell him I'd just been informed of him, and we had a chat just now. So, you know, Ruby read what and heard what Ruby said about him, you know, same as me.
You sound a bit emotional, Paul, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, it's a sad day. You know, he was here for 9 years. He took us to all the best places. He was everybody's horse, you know. He was so good for national hunt racing as a whole, and so many people came into racing because of him, and everybody was so fond of him. So, you know, it's a sad loss for everybody, but sadly these things happen.
I think a lot of people were very frustrated. I know you weren't overly happy and about what happened with Clive and when he was taken off to dressage. And a lot of racing fans, a lot of Cottle Star fans really couldn't understand that decision.
Well, look, every owner has a right to do what he likes with his own horse. He pays the bills. In hindsight, it would probably better if he'd stayed here with Clifford. But Clive was entitled to do what he wanted. And that's everybody's right. And he's, you know, Laura has, you know, looked after him wonderfully, and, you know, no reflection on her whatsoever. She's done well with him, but, you know, he's a champion racehorse, not a dressage horse, and whether it was Corto or Demon or Big Bus or any of those horses, you know, they're different animals, and they, you know, accordingly. But, he, you know, he's been well looked after, he's had a wonderful life, and it's just been a tragic accident, so you can't take that away from, you know, it's just one of those things that happened. But, you know, we had great days with him. Wonderful horse for me, Ruby, the whole team, Ditcher, and everybody in racing, really.
Can you just tell us what happened today? I mean, it's kind of unclear, sorry.
Well, I knew a minute before there was a press release this morning. I didn't know he'd been hurt beforehand, so I think something happened last week, but you'll probably read about it in the papers tomorrow. I still haven't heard the real, you know, in detail. That'll come out in the press and in the wash, I dare say, but, you know, obviously it's just been a tragic accident.
Okay, well, look, Paul, thanks so much for speaking to us. An incredible horse, and we're all very sad here. Thanks so much for your time.
We'll have some wonderful memories of it.
Thanks very much, Paul. Appreciate
it. Bye.
Paul Nicholls there. Obviously, a very tough day for him and for the team. You could hear it in his voice there.
Like a minute before the press release is when he was told about this. You know, that's just bizarre. It's almost like telling, you know, like having the father of your child out of the child's life, and then just ignoring the father, because that Nicholls was a massive part of this horse. You know,
were relationships that broken down?
Yeah, I guess they were. You know, I assume they were. I mean, I don't deal with Paul Nicholls very often. I find him very, very courteous with the media, and he's a great talker, and you can tell he's erring slightly on diplomacy's side with some of the things he's saying there. But can you imagine that you've trained the horse for the guts of whatever 10 years, and you know he's practically on death's door for what, 5 days, and you're told a minute before the press release, that's just smacks of almost like tokenism in effect, you know.
Sure.
And he's not blaming the girl that was looking Laura, but I find that quite strange, because clearly if you list the catalogue of problems that he had subsequent to the accident, he was probably you know, on death's door, and it's sad. And you know, again, he didn't castigate Clive Smith there. He alluded to the fact that he didn't agree with what happened, but it was a very stirring interview there, I thought.
He could have had that chance to say goodbye.
Yeah,
and he wasn't given it.
The vast majority of people who are listening to this show do not deal with horses day in, day out. People who deal with horses day in, day out, they're not far off being part of the family, you know. And he said, I think his words today were, he was my best mate, or he was my mate, you know. And if you're dealing with them, you get to know they're all different, they're individual, they have kinks, they have good points, they have bad points, you know. And when I warm to a horse, I always warm to horses like George Washington, Archibald, maybe horses who have a real kind of
personality
and perhaps flaws as well. And I assume Koto had his own little kinks. And it's just unfortunate, you know, that it's come to this in terms of Paul Nicholls, because Paul Nicholls was a masterful trainer of this horse, and he was brave as well. He ran him in all sorts of trips, ran him in different types of races, persevered with him when others said he should have been retired as well, you know. And it's a bit unfortunate.
I mean, 2.3 million in prize money for trainer and owner, 16 grade one wins, and then to take him off in that career, which is just fancy dancing for lunatics, if you ask me. But anyway, that's another different question.
To be fair, I'll give Clive Smith his due. He's, by all accounts, according to his own words, he's devastated himself.
Sure.
But, you know, I think Nicholls could definitely have been treated a bit more amenably here.
I've been fortunate enough to be down at JP McManus's yard and seen his Tobrac in retirement, and you'd let your children live there.
Of course you would, yeah.
You know, I mean, the horse has given so much. Having said that, the only time I ever backed it, his Tobrac was when he got pulled up.
That's like me with Rock of Gibraltar. I literally backed him the day he was second in the Breeders' Cup when the Lancer broke down in front of him. Yeah. It's amazing, you know, but anyway.
But for a horse, you know, for horse people, and if they're that special, you just let them out to grass and let them enjoy their retirement, not go fancy dancing, as you say, or something.
Yeah, okay, we'll come back to this later on because we have to move on. Pat Ryan, boxing coach at Port Leash Boxing Club, of course, who has been working with Michael O'Reilly for the last few years, is on the line. Hiya, Pat, how are you? Yeah, it's good to talk to you again. Listen, can I ask you, first of all, as a Port Leash man, watching Michael over the last week and a half or so, or 2 weeks, what did you make of his performances at the European Games?
Actually, his performance was fantastic. Like, you know, very emotional for everybody here in town, and certainly in the club, and personally, like, you know, it was a phenomenal achievement.
He didn't bat an eyelid, though, throughout the whole thing, no matter who he was facing or, you know, what the crowd was like against him. He seemed to take everything in his stride, and I think that stood out for me more than everything else, Pat. His ability is a given, but he just seems to have that really inborn confidence, if you like, in him, no matter who he's up against.
Well, I suppose, you know, he has wonderful traits, wonderful characteristics, and, you know, the level that he's boxing at now, at world-class level, like, calm and relaxed under pressure, like, is a very, very, very serious trait to have at that level. And it helps him, you know, in the competition. That's what separates him from the rest.
Has he always had that?
Absolutely. I suppose he's probably one of the most laid-back young men you could ever come across. He's very relaxed, very easy, never gets excited. You know, you never hear him speaking too loud. Everything is nice, you know. We train easy and we do the things. We train hard when we have to. And, you know, his preparation is very, very meticulous. You know, he takes his time. He knows what he's supposed to do. He knows how to train. And, you know, he just goes through the cycles.
He kind of reminds me a little bit of Jonjo Nevin, personality-wise, in that, you know, Jonjo gets into a ring and he's just this incredible performer, amazing mover. Michael, maybe different in styles in the ring, but in terms of his approach and his attitude, they're quite similar to me anyway.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, there's always you can always compare like with like sometimes, you know, but I think Michael is a different kind of boxer, you know. Michael can box and he can fight, you know. He can box in the three distances and he's very good at it. I think his track record, you know, he's a 4 times medal winner at European level, at European competition, gold and, you know.
This qualifies him now for the World Championship as well, Pat, which means, you know, please God, all going well there, he could book his place at the Olympic Games. So it's a massive opportunity now for him to go on and do well in Doha, I think, in Qatar, which is where the Worlds are at.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the fact that he has come through some very good campaigns. You know, Michael, as I said, like, has been in 4 different European competitions. He's boxed at the World Championships. Came in state, the world, ranked in the world. I think the fact that he's the world champion in the quarterfinals of the European Union from Kazakhstan speaks volumes for his ability.
Yeah.
And it also indicates clearly where he is at the world level and on the world stage.
Yeah, well, look, it's fantastic for him, for Port Leash as well, I'm sure, for all the coaches associated. Pat, thanks so many for your time. Appreciate it. Apologies for the line there. It wasn't great, but we had to call it a day really there, I suppose. Good news for Paul Dunne, who he had in this very studio recently enough today. We'll come back to it in our little golf slot, but you want to fill us in? He's booked his place?
Yeah, it's amazing. He's won the qualifier again. Yeah, he shot 9 under and he's beaten Retief Hoosen, who's won the US Open twice. He's beaten him by 4 shots.
Wow.
And he's won it by 3.
I tell you what.
Phenomenal performance.
These Greystones lads are just talent.
Well, there's definitely one golfer in Greystones, isn't there?
Yeah, okay, we'll talk more about Paul Dunne and golf a little bit later on with Gary. Johnny's going to stay with us as well because we've got Desi Dolan and Bernard Flynn coming up after the break.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Okay, you're very welcome back. Now, this week, 2FM giving away €10,000 to one lucky listener. To be in with a chance of winning the cash, all you have to do is listen to this. Come and look at some crazy right now. Your love's come and look at some crazy. Yeah, that's Beyonce from 2003. But who would she eventually marry? Is it Jay-Z or 50 Cent? To enter, text the word cash along with your name and answer to 57111. You've got to be over 18 to enter. Full terms and conditions are available on our website, and each entry will cost you €1 or £1 sterling. The lines are open now and stay open all this week until 6:45 on Friday, when Colm Hayes will announce a winner. Best of luck with that. Now, have a listen to this.
Kinnellan looks for support. The support player is Paddy Holloway on his shoulder. Back out to Kinnellan once again. The youngsters, 20 years of age, all the way down the field here, gathered in by John Kinnellan. Have you seen a better Westmead performance than this they've given in the second half? John Heslin now has a support player, may not need him. Goes for it, he scored! A goal by John Heslin to go with the 9 points he's already scored. And surely now it's Westmead. Tom Cribbins.
Yeah, incredible stuff there. Gerry Canning commentating for RT Television at the weekend. Desi Dolan and Bernard Flynn are on the line. Legends each in their own county. But Desi, can I ask you, have you ever seen a better Westmead performance than that?
I don't think so. Geez, that was great to listen to again. I feel bad for poor old Bernard there on the other side. Although he's lived in Westmead long enough and enjoyed it long enough, the victory, so we yeah. have to get him on this one.
Yeah, look, it was an incredible performance. Euphoria, I imagine, still all around Westmead at the moment. But as Kieran Shannon writes in the Examiner today, Desi, ask yourself, when last did a game of football in June have you as a neutral on the edge of the couch, leaping off it, urging a team over the line and hollering over their latest score as Westmead against Meath last Sunday? It just was an incredible game for the Championship.
It was absolutely incredible. And I know it was Westmead and Meath, but it was something special. In the we were doing the game in studio there, and they were saying, I think last week in the hurling at halftime, Tipperary scored 2-12. And everyone's saying that was amazing in a hurling game. And then Meath had scored 2-10 in the first half, which was incredible. And It was just one of them games that both teams just went at it, and eventually Meath just ran out of steam, and the Westmead lads are young, fit, fast, and they just drove it home.
Okay, so if Westmead were brilliant in that second half, Bernard, what happened Meath?
Well, first of all, you know, you take nothing away from what they did in the second half. It was just incredible, and like Desi sort of alluded there, they have had many tough days, you know, against Meath, but against other teams. Lady Luck many a time in Croke Park has not been on their side, and they had a little bit of that, and they deserved it. Incredible game for the neutrals. Mm. Meath, you know, and you know, just to be totally honest, it was a bit of a mad freak game. I don't think I've seen anything like it for years, to be honest with you. In the first half, you know, Meath probably missed 2-8, 2-9, conservatively. And in the second half, when you're that far ahead and to get a second time 9 points up again, 2-9 to 1-3, that was probably the time to close it out. Like Dublin, Donegal, teams like that there, Kerry, they would do that. And we were very naive, not taking away anything at all from what Westmead threw at us. And they were immense, particularly the younger players in the second half. And the changes worked brilliantly. But when you're that far ahead, it's a big bitter pill for me to swallow. The manner in the way they lost that game will hurt for a long time, because the naivety in our defending, and also our big name players around the middle of the park and that there, didn't really step up and do what they should have done for 15-20 minutes just to close out the game. And that's just being totally honest and an honest assessment. We should have closed out the game, but taking nothing away from Westmead.
Was it a fitness issue, do you think, Bernard?
Well, no, it was more mental. There's no doubt about it. I would have question marks over some of our bigger, physically, our bigger players. I've said for the last couple of years, I looked last year against Dublin, but particularly against Armagh and Croke Park in the second half, they ran us off the park. I do feel there's an issue there somewhere as regards conditioning and fitness levels, particularly of our bigger players. In saying that, Young McMahon and Wallace and guys like that, I thought they were superb on Sunday. And our younger players were probably our better players. Our bigger players didn't really lead. But there is an issue with the conditioning and the fitness. And that got us, but the mental frailty and the weaknesses there that we showed when they came at us time and time again. Somebody just to slow the ball down, you know, even to start a bit of a row. And Desi's been a master in club football in Westmead at that. all the time at vital times. I've seen it firsthand. So little things, the small little things the Donegals do. You've seen them when they got the goal, Donegal last weekend, straight away just slowed the game down, took the spark out of Derry, played the ball around, held it, nothing happened then for a while. So little things like that. And Mick O'Dowd said the average age is 23, but the way they lost the game will linger and hurt those players and the management for a while.
Okay, let's move it on a bit. So for both teams, Desi, I mean, obviously the entire county is celebrating at the moment, but the players surely have to park that and the management team and focus on what is a massive train coming down the track in the form of Dublin and the Leinster final?
Yeah, in fairness, I suppose up till yesterday they were enjoying it, winning, and the whole experience of winning the match. I was in the gym last night with some of the lads, and they were straight back at it. Someone were in ice bath, someone were just doing a stretching session. Like, these guys are a different bunch of lads. They train extremely hard. They try to do everything right. And even when I was playing with a lot of them, I always felt that they did everything right in terms of, you know, like, they're training in the gym, they were eating right, they were doing all the right things, but just they didn't really have much belief. And I think this year the difference is they've beaten Louth, they've beaten Wexford, and now they've beaten Meath. And the sky's the limit with young lads when you have grown in confidence. And I presume that game gave them an awful lot of confidence. If they play like they did in the first half, Dublin will wipe them off the floor. If they play like they did in the second half, you would imagine that they're going to give Dublin a game.
Would you say? I mean, Ger Egan said that it's just exactly what you did. They've beaten nearly everybody in Leinster at some stage this season so far, so why not Dublin? But Dublin just seemed to be so many levels ahead. I'm wondering, even if Westmeath produced that second half performance again, over 70 minutes, will it be enough?
Well, I think the reality is, like, it was the traditional big names was Dublin and Meath, and, like, Bernard's kind of hitting the nail on the head a bit. Like, Meath aren't the same team as they were, and the Meath of 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I suppose, wouldn't let that happen, where they just kind of folded. And
were you surprised by that, Desi? Were you surprised by what you were saying?
Well, it's never a Meath team. The one thing with Meath teams is they keep going and going and going, and they're hard, and they're a bit of cuteness. I know Paddy Rourke went down with his mystery injury with his foot, like, but they just don't let things like that happen. They should have closed out the game in the first half. They did miss about 2-8, as Bernard mentioned. I don't know. There is questions to be asked there. It's very unlike them, the way they folded. And once Westmeath got the momentum, they were very quick to cave in.
I mean, Bernard, on Friday night we spoke on this show about that hard edge that Meath, you wanted to see back, particularly what happened in the Leinster final against Dublin last season. And you know, first half, after 35 minutes, we thought, okay, you know, Meath are back. This is actually, you know, football that Mick O'Dowd can stand over, that the county can be proud of. And then this just complete collapse. So I'm wondering, with Tyrone coming down the tracks for Meath, like, what does Mick O'Dowd, where does this leave him?
You know, in the first half, I'd have to say we played absolutely some superb football. Some of the scores were immense. They were absolutely, the movement off the ball, the finishing was fantastic, and you could not. Some of the scores from the top draw are as good as we've scored and performed in Croke Park for the last number of years. Well, Mick's still in the championship, and the Meath team are still in the championship. And believe it or not, I actually think they've a decent chance against Tyrone. I really do.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Just to think about this, I would rather see them going to Tyrone and playing Tyrone than playing Tyrone in Navan. And I do, after the Wicklow game and the expectations there, and maybe there's too much expectations from a squad like it, from the supporters and past players and whatnot. But I do think Tyrone are not that good. I watched them there last Sunday. They were very, very poor. I was very disappointed with them. Meath have a real good chance. And the one thing about Meath, they don't lie down for too often. I'd expect a big reaction. Yes, it's going to hurt, and there's going to be a little bit of a hangover. But I think 2 weeks to prepare well, work on the positives, and maybe setting out the team. I think maybe Kevin Riley back in full back, a few things like that. Maybe Keoghan going back in there as well. Retweak the team a little bit, because there was a lot of positives. Now, you cannot stand over what happened in the last 20-25 minutes. But there's only one way. Let's get back on the horse and beating Tyrone. And Meath are well capable at this stage of beating that Tyrone team. I do believe that. And Mick O'Dowd, what can he do when he stand up, come out fighting and try and be positive? And his managerial skills will be tested over the next 2 weeks like never before. And that's when his young players need him and a strong manager.
Speaking of young players, Desi, I mean, it's a big chance for some of the Westmeath guys to test themselves against, well, I'm looking at Jim McGuinness's column today in the Irish Times, Dara O'Shea last week, and, you know, two very respected opinions in Gaelic football, both suggesting Dublin are just at another level to everybody else this year. You know, I suppose we would have said it last year as well until they were found out, but Jim McGuinness saying this year, if Donegal try what they did last year again this season, it won't be good enough against Dublin.
Yeah, look, if you were to put it into perspective, Dublin played probably the last eight games in Leinster. They've averaged victories between 15 and 20 points, and that's with all the teams they've played. So they're extremely strong. They've an extremely strong panel. They've learned a bit from last year with how the Donegal beaten them. I think they've taken an awful lot out of that game. But Westmeath is going well. There's an awful lot of positive things at Westmeath. The setup, like Club Air V is set up in Westmeath now, and it's a big thing for the county. They're trying to get everybody under the one hat, you know, sell tickets, kind of improve the standards within the county. They're trying to get a centre of excellence like that would rival other counties, support teams going to fail. And it's similar in a way to what Club Rossi are. And they've come on strides in how their team is prepared. But Westmeath, it's a great time in the fact that they're trying to get things right and trying to put the structures in. And they do have a lot to catch up on with other counties. The players themselves, you know, like, they are young, they're fit, they're extremely good at doing everything they should be doing. But, like, when you're talking about, you know, big multi-million pound sponsorship deals that Dublin would have and comparing it to what Westmeath have, like, financially it's difficult to compete. And I think the GAA probably should do more in that. But in terms of the GAA and the young lads, they're great lads in that county. They do need, playing Dublin is a juggernaut, especially in Croke Park, because they're so familiar with it. But like, our lads are going to grow and grow and grow in confidence, and it's a good time in the county in the fact that people are trying to get the structures right with Club Air V outside it, and then the players are winning matches on the pitch. So you just hope that the future is bright in the county, like, you know, and things can kind of improve a bit.
They are having a fundraiser for Club Air V, just while you mention it there, I just have details here, in a form of a golf classic, and the draw is taking place on Wednesday, July the 10th. You can buy tickets for that as well, if you want to support Club Air V in Westmeath. Bernard, here's something that kind of cropped up in front of me today, and I'm just wondering on the wider issue of football in the media at the moment, which has actually been taking a bit of a hammering from all quarters. But I saw Diane Hoare resigned as the ladies' football manager there after their defeat to Westmeath last weekend. She was pretty scathing at the lack of support from the county board in her resignation letter. So many obstacles put in front of them, the lack of cooperation with the county board between the county team and the club teams. And she said she's had enough and she's gone. And I'm wondering, does that transfer to how the men are set up, or is it completely unrelated, or is there an issue here with the relationship between the county board and Meath and the clubs and the county structure?
What I know and my own experience, I mean, I can say this to you with a hand in the heart, that the way we were looked after in my 12 years was just incredible. And I mean that. We wanted for nothing. At that time, I believed we were the best looked after team in the country. And a lot of it down to Sean Boyle and sponsorship with Keepack. But and even the Meath teams over the last number of years, the guys are very well looked after. And that's my honest assessment and my knowledge that I know, no doubt about it, and they're treated very, very well. I did see that, what you're speaking about. I don't know much about it, to be totally honest, on the ladies' end of it, with no disrespect, but as regards the men at the senior level.
Okay.
And I do think there have been issues. I don't think we've looked after our underage over the last number of years the way we should have. I think there's been a lot of issues there that are trying to be addressed and need to be addressed. But as regards the seniors, they've always been very, very well looked after, and I really mean that. And in my time, it was incredible the way we were looked after.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. No, I just, you know, I suppose it just, the mind started to wander, and I just wondered if it was a connection, but obviously
just,
not.
One thing on the Desi was picking, if I could just.
Yeah, sure.
And it is, it's great to see the enthusiasm Desi's speaking about, and everybody, and yesterday morning in the town and today has just been incredible. But just a little word of caution, I mean this with the utmost respect of someone who's living here for 24 years, that, you know, you get a chance, like Westmeath have got, to go through a door and to make a massive breakthrough in one foul swoop, and that has done, and they've earned it. But it's a lot of hard work to stay up there. And, you know, I know from experience, I've experienced a lot of down times as well as some up times in football. You've got to be very careful, and they've got to be very grounded and work extremely hard. And what will happen against Dublin will happen. You know, it'll take whatever happens. It's from after that match for the next couple of years that, you know, I'd be looking at Westmeath, but in the serious hard work to stay up there and be one of the top teams. And that's the challenge, not the Leinster final.
Okay, we'll leave it on that note. Desi and Bernard, thanks so much for your time. Very much appreciated.
Okay.
Super stuff, lads. Johnny, quick word to you. I presume you would have seen the match on Sunday after were you at the Curragh?
I did. I was at the Curragh, and it was fantastic. Everyone in the press room was just you know, enthralled by it. But I went for a couple of pints in my local that night, and you know, the reaction is kind of like, what's the handicap going to be in the final? You know, and I, as I looked at, I think it's 16.
It's not.
It's 16. So like, I genuinely thought the handicap was pitched low at 11.5
in the Kildare match. Yeah, I thought so too. We had a little word on it on Friday night.
Yeah, and
I did say it'd be over after 20 minutes, and it was.
Yeah,
almost everyone I spoke to said the same. I did it in a treble with anybody. I didn't actually make any money from it, but that's the reality for Westmeath. And does something like that, the inevitable battering, is that, does that help their development? Whereas Meath go and play Tyrone in a competitive game, you know, it's going to be difficult, but it's really galvanised people in the Midlands.
Yeah, by the way, Wicklow did not let you down, as you saw, and missed about 49 frees that they should have got. If they had anybody who could kick the ball over the bloody bar, they actually could have beaten Armagh, and that would have really turned a few noses up.
Yeah, but then Wexford had such an amazing performance.
So. Yeah, they did, and I told you that was the one to watch out for. And then Donegal, they couldn't cover the handicap either, so...
No.
Handicaps is the place to be, though, in GA betting. There are definitely value there. Like,
absolutely, you know. 100%. Okay, we're going to leave this. We're back with golf and with Johnny after the break.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.
Oh, God, I tell you. Some folk out there, lads. Leicester City have sacked manager Nigel Pearson, by the way. Obviously, incredible finish to the season to avoid relegation, but the problems that Nigel himself had in his dealings with the press, and then subsequently the club, and then his son with his little off-field antics and massive racism over in Thailand during the summer. He was released from his contract as well, and you put two and two together and you get goodbye, Mr. Pearson. Don't think be too many local reporters unhappy about that. Also, should let you know, it's nil-all with about 10 minutes to go in the Europa League, 6 minutes to go. Shamrock Rovers away in Luxembourg against Progress Niederkorn. We're going to have a full-time report on that before the end of the show, I promise you. Now, Gary, Keegan Bradley takes... over a minute in his pre-shot routine, and it's actually getting worse. It's like a guy who's losing his mind in his pre-shot routine. What's going on here?
Well, it's not really his fault. It's the PGA Tour's fault for not clamping down.
Exactly.
End of story. You get, the way it normally goes is if in a three ball, it's 50, 45, 40 seconds. But realistically, the third guy, that 40 seconds should be a maximum of 20. Because you're, you know, further up, you've got your time, your decision is made. And it only, the clock only starts, or the clock starts when the club comes out of the bag. But he looks like he had a dose of diarrhea or something the other night. It was ridiculous.
It's like watching a reel. I step out and you step in again. Out again, in again, hat up, down, twiddle around the club and hit the ball. It's ridiculous.
And it was a wedge in the middle of the fairway. You know, it wasn't like it was a 3-wood off a downslope over a lake to win the Open Championship or something. I mean, it was, well, not that you'd be going over a lake to win an Open, but
yeah,
he's got some issues, and he really needs to. Maybe that's what Miguel was talking to him about, his pre-shot routine.
Man, I'd say Miguel did not like that. But I mean, there's a video on YouTube, by the way, you can look it up. Just type in Keegan Bradley, Jason Duffner. And it's Keegan Bradley giving out about Jason Duffner's swing and how long it takes him to swaddle his club back and forth. And then I'm looking at this guy and it shows the club up. Do you know when he sits down to read the putts on the greens and he cocks his head to the side?
Yeah.
And he looks like he's going to shoot you in the middle of the head. He's just an absolute oddball, this lad.
It's funny, like I got fined for slow play in Munich, where they played last week on the 11th green, for being over time. It cost me £4,000.
How much did you leave Munich with? Like, did you actually win a few quid?
I can't remember actually.
Okay,
but they have to start. There's no point fining Keegan Bradley £4,000. I mean, it's like cup of tea and a biscuit. They have to penalise one shot and then two shots and then let them double from there on in, because they have to do something to speed up the game.
Because he's actually getting worse.
He actually really should have been airlifted off the course the other day. Like, the ref should have just
shocking
zoomed over on his buggy and said, listen mate, get in the back of the car, you're out of here.
He's no place in the golf course.
No, it's wrong, and it's a horrendous message. I mean, and I never thought myself to be a slow player, but when that happened to me, I really went, okay, I remember Andy McPhee sent to me, Gary, you have to realise that you're a slow player. And I'm like, I'm not Andy.
Mm.
But I went down on the range and worked out, and I had it down to 18 seconds. Gone, you know, that was my routine, everything done. And it never happened to me again. But I still refute the claim, but that's neither here nor there.
I think the point is,
like,
well,
his is insane. And in fairness to the guy, like, it's only going to get worse. Like,
this
golf
is
a game. Once the mad dogs start barking in your head, the game is over. You end up trying to beat a ginger off 13 from Greystone to her arms in the middle of Cavan.
I'm going
to
take you down, buddy. I tell you, like, every player has their own little individual habits and routines and stuff, and that's fine. There's no issue if you get it over and done with. One of my best mates, you know, pretty much does the huckle buck before he hits every shot, but he does it in 10 seconds and then and off you go. Fine. So no issue with that. But this guy takes a minute, Gary.
Yeah.
60 seconds over every shot.
And it's actually longer, really, because if you think if he's third going in, it's probably up to 3 minutes. And it's insane, really, because he's got a caddy there.
But the PGA Tour are bottling them, because who was the young kid from Japan that they find at the Masters? Sorry, they dropped
Chinese,
the shot. The Chinese guy.
Yeah.
At the Masters.
And then let Tiger away with his.
Exactly. That's the wrong message.
Yeah, no, they are. There's no denying it. I mean, I think the European Tour are a lot stronger on it. I mean, John, there's two great guys in charge, John Parmore and Andy McPhee, and they don't take any nonsense at all. But the PGA Tour, it has to be done. I mean, the game it's a great game, but it has to be sped up. It's insane how long it takes to play around the golf.
Robbie's saying on here there, Kevin Nadd, was he punished recently by the PGA Tour?
He had a major situation at the Players a couple of years ago, and he's really worked on it.
That's right. I remember that.
He couldn't get the club back. He almost had the yips.
Yeah.
But he went off and he worked on it. Now, if Keegan Bradley doesn't get called in, he's going to keep doing, because he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong. Now, surely his management team, if he's a proper management team in place and they know anything about the game, which you would presume that they would do, if they don't call him aside and go, listen, this looks bad for everyone. It looks bad for your sponsors. It looks bad for you. It looks bad for everyone involved. You look like an idiot. You know, just get on with it.
Yeah.
Because then you have situations where that's on a normal middle of the fairway wedge shot. There's no decision as such to be made. If he has tough shots to play, you can double the time, and it's...
Just making a note for the Slee Russell Pro-Am, be very slow for Gary, take his money. Listen, Paul Dunne, tell me how exciting it is to have a guy go out and shoot 9-under, win the qualifier for the Open Championship and play in his second Open in succession as an amateur.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, we waxed lyrical years ago when Owen O'Connell shot 265 to qualify for the Open, and Paul did it last year, got into Hoylake, fabulous experience.
St. Andrews now.
And St. Andrews is different.
We have to go over to that.
Yeah, I think we could do an OB there.
An OB from St. Andrews. Week, Robbie, sort that out. Lovely. JJ, you're on the case. Good stuff.
Amazing. And I mean, it's just good news story after every good news story with Irish amateur golf. Cormac Sharvin won the Brabazon Trophy last week. Gavin Moynihan was second. Jack Hume was third. It's the first time in the history of the tournament Ireland has ever had a 1, 2 and 3. First Ulster man since Ronan Rafferty in 1980 to win it, and they're going. Six of them are going to the European Amateur Championships in Sweden, and it's just Irish amateur golf is in a, you know, after the high of last week, you think it's going to mellow out a bit, and then Paul goes and leads the qualifiers, beating major champions. Monty was there, Retief Houston, all of them. It's great for Irish amateur golf.
Carl Holmes, the pro on Gravestones, if you're listening, I think your bet's going to come good. European Tour winner. About 15 years ago, I put a bet on. We're all going out for dinner on that one, I can tell you, when it happens. Have a think about your bets, because we've got France come up this weekend on the European Tour. We'll come back to you in just a couple of minutes. Gary, stay with us. And Johnny as well, I want to ask you your opinion of the Derby. Gary Cal, though, from Tennis Ireland, is on the line from Wimbledon. Hi, Gar.
How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Not too. Listen, 41 degrees popped up on the old BBC cameras there today, so I imagine a man like yourself is in factor 50 and a bucket of sweat at the moment.
Yeah, it's absolutely rough. I just took off my sunglasses and I can see the marks in the mirror. So yeah, it's absolutely roasted, yeah.
What about trying to play tennis in that, though?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't think people expect it here, but yeah, it's tough, and you can see the players are drinking more than normal, and you know, it's actually really warm. It's as warm as it is in a lot of the other slams. You expect it in Australia, and you expect it in New York. You don't always expect it in London, but it's really warm here.
What about the atmosphere? Is it good? Before we get into the matches today, I presume the crowds are as big and as boisterous as ever.
Yeah, but you know, it was like I was at the Murray match today, and it was a foregone conclusion really that he was going to win that match. So it wasn't a great atmosphere. Not like a five setter, but yeah, a lot of people. It's very, very busy. Queues outside seem to be huge. I mean, the people queuing there all morning and haven't got in. So it's extremely busy.
Wow, yeah. What about Andy Murray then? Because I watched most of his match. A minor blip in that second set when he went to break down and had to break back to stay in the set against Kukushkin. But other than that, it didn't seem to me to be anywhere near top form. And maybe that's the weather. Maybe it's his first round match, so we can forgive him a little bit of time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I'd say he's just playing himself in. He was like, he looked really good in Queens. Looked very comfortable on the grass, and yet he was. I mean, he was always going to win that match. You could see when, you know, when he needed to, he was able to up the gear. I don't think he was really firing off all cylinders. He didn't serve well today, but Kukushkin was never really going to win it. So yeah. I mean, he was probably in second gear. Yeah.
Would you be a fan of Andy Murray, Gary?
Yeah, no, I like him, and I think it's obviously great for tennis over our side of the world to have someone like Andy Murray and someone, you know, coming from Scotland. Look, it's great for tennis. I do like him. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay, I won't say any more on that. What did you make of the accusations surrounding Novak Djokovic, Gary? Him allegedly getting illegal help from his coach, Boris Becker, and the Serbian pals around him as well that are up in the box in the stands. What do you think of it?
I don't know. I mean, I think it happens all the time. I think players look at the coaches in matches for, you know, any tips, any reassurance, you know. I think it happens all the time. Coaches can, you know, use hand signals, can, you know, in Challenger Tour and Futures Tour, they can actually talk to the players when they're on the court. You know, okay, they're not supposed to, but it happens all the time. I mean, I witness it all the time that you've coached at the back of the court and they're telling players where to serve and telling players where to hit the ball. In Grand Slams, you can't do that because you're too far away from the player. But yeah, look, I'm sure it happens, and I'm sure it happens all the time. But what can you really say?
Well, that's it. I mean, do you think there's any appetite to pursue this from the authorities? Do you think there's anybody who's actually concerned enough that anything will be done? I mean, Djokovic doesn't seem to care a jot, neither do Nadal or any of the other players.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's the same for everybody. So, no, I think it's a bit blown out of proportion, to be very honest. You know, I think Becker was probably putting his hands up and down to tell him to cool down, which is, you know, normally what you see from coaches. It's not like they're able to tell them, you know, where you should serve and, you know, what you should do at certain stages in the matches, because, as I said, the players are too far away, you can't hear them. So it's only like reassurance, really, more so than coaching.
Okay, so give us your winner, if it's not too much pressure on you. Nadal, Murray today, comfortable. Federer, Djokovic won yesterday. Who do you like?
Well, the problem with Djokovic is he hasn't played any grass court tournaments. I mean, obviously he's the favourite, but it's strange that he hasn't played anything coming up to the tournament. I think Murray looks great. I think, you know, I've seen him practicing during the week. I think he looks so comfortable on the grass. I think Murray could win it again.
There is the sense, though, that Djokovic needed that break, I think, after being beaten in the final by Wawrinka. Yeah. He just looked very tired in that last couple of sets, and I think the break was nearly as good as the practice, if you like, in this situation. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, he probably needed the break, but you know, you do need matches on grass, and you know, I think it helps to have, like what Andy Murray has, to have a tournament under his belt. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. On grass, anything can happen. You can have someone who can serve really well on a day and make it very difficult if you're not grooved into the surface.
Yeah.
And that's what I worry about with Djokovic. You know, it's very unusual not to have played any tournaments coming up to a Grand Slam.
Okay, listen, Gary, we'll catch up with you throughout the tournament.
No,
thanks so many for your time there, appreciate it.
No problem.
Cheers. Gary Cowell from Tennis Ireland there. Okay, we're going to move straight on because Shamrock Rovers have finished up their Europa qualifier in Luxembourg against Progress. Niederkorn and Paul Butner is on the line to tell us about it. How did it finish, Paul?
Yes, you all over here. Pro Grey, Niederkorn, nil. Shamrock Rovers, nil. But two brilliant second half saves from Shamrock Rovers keeper Craig Hyland were the key highlights of this game of two halves at the Stade d'Overcorn. Despite the stifling 30 degree heat, Rovers utterly dominated the first half. Marty Waters glancing a header from Simon Madden's cross, signalling their intent after 5 minutes. Mikey Drennan then counts on a defensive mistake to shave the outside of a post on 14 minutes. Gary McCabe's clever feet carved another Rovers opening. 7 minutes later, he beat two men, only to scuff his shot wide. But Pro Grey came into it more as the half wore on, and their danger man, Giuseppe Rossini, saw his lob come back off a post a minute before half-time. Pro Grey were much better after the break, and Hyland had to make his first telling save with a superb stop from Rossini's header from Sebastian Thill's cross, with the ball frantically scrambled clear in the first minute of that second half. Not surprisingly, in the muggy heat, the tempo of the game dropped as the game wore on before Rovers had Hyland to thank again for the save of the game on 74 minutes. Olivier Cassan had a shot blocked away, but the ball sat up nicely for Sill, and the midfielder's curling shot with the outside of his left foot was brilliantly touched away, one-handed by Hyland. Rovers didn't create much in the second half, but on the evidence of the first, Pat Fennan must feel quietly confident of getting through this tie at Tallaght Stadium next Tuesday night.
Okay.
Finished here at the Stade d'Auberghorn, Pro Grey, Nidacorn, nil, Shamrock Rovers.
Okay, great stuff, Paul. Thanks for that. No goals conceded, so not a bad start. Very quickly, Gary, your bets.
In the French Open, Molinari, yeah. Levy, and blankety blank on the last one.
Okay,
we
tweeted.
States, Webb Simpson, Brendan Young is good outsider, and Patrick Rogers.